You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all? Yeah.
Our government cares about
they you. Ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself. Yeah. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe. It simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're planning a good weekend. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. And of course, if it's not, you'll get it done anyway. Because that's why we love you and have great admiration and respect for you. Because you will always persevere. You will always meet the challenge. You will always do what you say you're going to do. You're a man of your word. You're a woman of your word. And that's why we hold you in high regard. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world if you cannot listen to this program live. Of course, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Look for podcasts. Click on that, and then you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. So check them out, African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Every Monday and Wednesday after this program. Oh, I apologize. My brother gave his last program this Wednesday. Brother Franklin Jones, Black Matrix. He has some other things he wants to do. So no longer will the Black Matrix be on from Monday and Wednesday, but he will be on. I'll make sure that have him on my program so we can chop it up together. Also, today, Esoteric Review from 1 to 2 with Sister Marcy. Her broadcast will not happen today, but look for her in the very immediate future. Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy Lee from 1 to 2 every Friday. On Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Wahad from 6 to 8 on Mondays. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365. And after that is Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. Black Reality Think Tank with your host, Dr. William Rogers, from 8 to 10. Black Reality Think Tank on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, it's Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. And then on Thursdays, it's Conversations, Reparations with Sister Brother Troy and Sister Joy and Troy. And on Friday, if it's Friday 8 p.m., it's Eastern, and you know it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So tonight at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and it's Time for an Awakening. And every Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on the Motherland Media Network. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We buy black.
We Buy Black. Get everything you need. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. So you can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. Remember, I was on the website this past Wednesday talking about a lot of the things that they're offering. Please go on the website, WeBuyBlack.com. But if you're in the Atlanta area and you want to check out some of the products, they have them on sale at the Greenbrier Mall. They have a kiosk, We Buy Black. And you can pick up a lot of those products there. Africa for the Africans. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bamani Tahimba, he recently returned trip to Ghana. I was on the website and I mentioned the other trips that he is planning. He's planning about three other trips this year in 2020. So go on the website or give him a call, 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. Brother Bamani Tahimba, I'm not sure if the latest trips will be on the Facebook or the YouTube, but why not try? But go anyway. Go to Facebook.com for photos, Facebook.com/Bomani. Go to YouTube.com for videos, /Bomani2007. Shrine of the Black Madonna, tomorrow's Saturday, so his African class of Know Thyself will be happening tomorrow at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. The African history class, Know Thyself, every Saturday, free and open to the public from 1:30 to 3:30. Brother Olatunji, outstanding job of instructing. And that, of course, is the Shrine of the Black Madonna located in the West End area. And check out the shrine. This is the phone number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. And they have everything. They got clothing. They got furniture. They got the red, black, and green. And they got shoes. They got artwork and so forth. But what they have, they got books, brothers and sisters. The Shrine of the Black Madonna is a cultural center and bookstore. And if you call them, they don't have the book that you're looking for, they'll get it for you. So give them a call at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And, of course, if you can't make that class but you want that information, that's right. The Shrine has a multimedia library that you can purchase that is now 7 terabytes of African enlightenment. 7 terabytes. And that's huge. A lot of information. In fact, like they just said, over 15,000 video files, well over 15,000. Over 15,000 images, well over 15,000. Well over 40,000 audio files, well over 40,000, and over 2,000 books. You know it's well over that. It's 7. Because when they printed this out, it was 4.5 terabytes. And now they got 7. So the other bookstore, of course, is in the Greenbrier Mall. It's the Medu Bookstore located in the Greenbrier Mall. If you are by the kiosk of We Buy Black, then you are right in front of or behind of or whatever from the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The number to call is 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263, and call them if you're in the Greenbrier Mall area, stop in. But if you're not and you're looking for a book, you want to see if they have it, call them. If they don't, they'll get it. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, my good brother Gazimdi Ajamu. That's right, the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Give brother Gazimdi Ajamu a call. He has T-shirts, clothing. He has books, of course. It's the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. He also has the red, black, and green shoes. The nigga has shoes. So give him a call, 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, in the spirit of Ujamaa, in their Thursday night broadcast. I listened last night. It's good to hear Baba Kima and Sister Nanana, and what Us Lifting Us is continuing to try to do. And of course, the main focus is the upcoming conference in the middle of March. More about that and have people on to talk about it. But please go online, become a member of Us Lifting Us. Become a member. Join, go to usliftingus.com and check out what we're talking about. If you want to hear, every Thursday night, the Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. And that is at 9 p.m. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. And there's also a way you can just not call, but go right to Dare to Win on Blog Talk. I'll have that next week. So you can, if you want to, just when you're on your computer and you're doing some other stuff, you can open up that and put in Dare to Win, and you can listen to the broadcast that way. Okay. All right. Akabin Institute, Akabin, the relationship is going to be on the 1st at the Akabin Institute. Relationships that it begins that morning with the men. Baba Baruti is the lead, and the workshop focus will be preparing for a relationship, selecting a compliment, sustaining relationships, dating and marriage, and that is going to be on Saturday, February 1st, from 10 to 2. And then after, it'll be the sisters. It'll be the sisters, and they will be on from, let me see if I can find that for you. They'll be on right after that. I'm not even going to worry about it. I'll have it for you the next day, because there's still a little bit of time. So, Akabin Institute, make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Brother Baruti and Sister Yah have been doing outstanding work in educating our young warriors. And, of course, they need help. They need help. That's just the reality. Many of the young warriors that they have, the parents are not as financially able. Let's be real. And of course, I know some of you are saying, well, you know, they could always go to the... That's the problem. Those other schools are destroying our children. The other schools are destroying us. So if you have PayPal or Cash App, just put in the $ in Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and make your contributions, make it ongoing. Black Sonjay-Haiti. org. Sister Gabrielle Aurelia in the northeastern part of the island of Haiti, the rural area. And please go to their website. Went on to last day. Beautiful pictures of those brothers and sisters, those young children being educated, the medical component they have to make sure the health of the people are there, and then, of course, ability to feed themselves and to sell goods that they grow and make. Black Talk Radio Network Media Fund is still ongoing, from what I understand. So go to the Black Talk Radio Network and make your contributions. The Black Talk Radio Network Media Fund, that's how we stay on the air. That's why it's necessary. All right. The Enye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. January 9th, we take this blood oath so that one day the children and the unborn will take the same oath in our names. Mukasa, Africa. We owe each and every African ancestor who contributed to the identification, study, building, sustaining, and passing down of the African way. We owe them beyond human measure, for without them we would not be, nor be as we are. The only way that we can ever hope to repay them for their work on our behalf is to be them in everything we think, say, and do, offering others the African possibility by example. Studying their wisdom tells us that they recognize our efforts at this time and in this place has an ongoing process of reclaiming and re-Africanizing and nation building. We can but hope that they continue to contribute to our study of our uncompromising traditions of personal obligation. And we ask only that they open our minds to a warrior's reason for giving the deepest and most sincere reverence for what has always worked for us, so that we can and future generations of Africans can safely come back home. The Ugandans say a promise is a debt. Our debt to them is immeasurable. Yet we African scholars promise to fully and gracefully pay this debt. To this end, we take the oath with our blood, knowing what it means to us, them, and all of our ancestors and our descendants. Affirm, I swear to love and defend African people with my very blood. Ashe. Affirm, I swear to love and defend African people with my very blood. January 10th. Every man teaches as he acts. Ptahotep of the 5th dynasty of ancient Kemet. Ptahotep. As strange as this may sound, there are two ways Africans can attain eternal peace. The African way, a genuine harmony, and the European way, a delusional one. We can mentally and actively wholly locate ourselves in either reality, but there's a difference. European sanity requires that Africans be turned away from themselves. African sanity requires that Africans be turned into themselves and instinctively away from Europeans. We cannot do both. It's that simple. One cannot do both. When there is a compromise between what you know has to be done to save our people and what you're willing to compromise to be safe, there can be no peace. This is true for most of us. Most of us operate somewhere between African sanity and European sanity, caught in a chaotic state of delusion. We know when there is a contradiction between what we say and what we do, between what we know and what we do, between what we know must be done and what we settle for. When you know you are not uncompromisingly acting as you know you are, peace is not possible. Such contradictions are not even evidence in those of us who know we must answer to the ancestors and our children if we choose not to be African. Only when what we know we must do matches what we are doing is there an African sanity. To fully embrace a heritage of excellence and rebellion in order to return to our excellent drives one toward an African sanity, the only authentic peace for African people. Ashe. Affirm, I think and act within African peace. Affirm, I think and act within an African peace. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. And it's real. I tell you, you know, it's interesting that I understand that we must struggle. And that's why I've said many times, I'd rather struggle in a world of my own choosing than to be a fool in somebody else's dream. This is the European's dream. He came here and he took this. He came and pretty much took the Western Hemisphere. But I'm focusing on this country, United Snakes, because of what it did uniquely as opposed to other parts of the world where Europeans came and took and established themselves. Because here in the Western Hemisphere, their stamp is all over it, literally around the world. But this, the Western Hemisphere, because the Western Hemisphere is either Spanish, English, French, Portuguese. And then, of course, they brought us. And then, of course, the people they encountered who were here for literally thousands of years prior to their arrival. And, of course, what they wanted to do was eliminate that or suppress that or undermine that or do whatever they can. So you see what they've done to us, particularly here in America. It's the captivity here in America is more unique than other places in that it was totally stripped of any understanding or knowledge of self, totally. Where in some parts of the world, you know, Africans rebelled and went up into various parts of different parts of the land and created what they call the Quilombos, you know, or Maroons, you know, and Africans fought and went into interiors of places where they lived like they lived on the continent. Check out Suriname, you know, and of course the indigenous peoples, their influence. But here in the United Snakes of America, this situation is totally dominated by Europeans, by Caucasians, and specifically the British. And of course, you know my deep disdain for the British, you know, regardless of what's happening now with Markle and Prince, whatever his name is. You know, I hate the royals. They have something on this in America, because understand this, Britain and America, same damn thing. America and Germany, America, French, America, Spanish. That's why when you talk about reparations, no, we ain't talking about, that's why I can't stand ADOS and what they have done. Because the focus is not about America. The focus is about Europeans, what they have done globally and what they have done to the continent of Africa, and because of what they have done to the descendants and to those in the diaspora, which continues to happen. The reason why we have no friends nowhere and treated like everywhere is because of European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege, which they have established for their benefit. And they've shaped it and fashioned it in their image and in their interest. And they don't give a damn whether you like it or not. And to this day, they ain't given up one damn bit. They'll continue on. They ignore all the truths, all the, just like I'm saying, they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe, the Europeans believe, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the Belgians, the Finns, all of them, the Swedes, the Netherlands, all of them believe that they are superior, and they created a theology, Christianity, with imagery of themselves, and they are superior. It is a fallacy. It is an all-out lie. There is no historical significance or relevance or any connection. But yet it persists, and it persists deeply in the minds of us. We're going to talk a little bit about education, a little foundation here. I had a guest. My guest, Brother Kill Parker, was on previously. He'll be on again, hopefully soon. Yeah. So I'm going to give a little synopsis of three sisters that I you know, one I know very well, and that's Sister Ani, met Queen Mother and now Ancestor Frances Cress Welsing, and met Sister Dr. Joy DeGruy. And her work, I had her at the National Black United Front Convention in Milwaukee about 7 years ago. And I don't know. I think she was in Philadelphia, but she might be here in Atlanta. I know her daughter was here. Educating a nation, saluting the queen mothers of African liberation philosophy. The surest way to keep a people down is to educate the men and neglect the women. If you educate a man, you simply educate an individual. But if you educate a woman, you educate a whole nation. It was more than 90 years ago that a Ghanaian educator, James Iman Arik, I can't pronounce the last name, who spoke these words. He understood way back then how important a role women play as mothers and teachers of future generations. Today, has Women's Month? Was that last month? Today, as Women's History Month comes to an end, I want to give thanks for three women who have worked hard to nurture us intellectually and to free our minds of miseducation and self-destructive ideas about who we are and our place in the world. Frances Cress Welsing, Uncovering the Motive for Racism. Dr. Frances Cress Welsing is a legend in the African-centered movement who almost needs no introduction. She is a trained psychiatrist and the author of the ISIS papers, The Keys to the Colors. Her interest in the psychology behind European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege, as they say, white supremacy, began after she read Neely Fuller's text for victims of a Caucasian extremism, in which she explains how racism operates in 9 different areas of human activity. She wanted to know why it operated to begin with. And in 1970, she answered her own questions with the Crest theory of color confrontation. The presentation I remember her giving when she said it came like a epiphany when she was in her home in the kitchen area. It came to her, you know, of why this situation is what it is. And that happens sometimes, you know. You've been thinking about an issue and a problem and so forth, and suddenly the answer comes to you. Unsurprisingly, her theory has generated a lot of controversy over the years. The basic gist is that once Europeans learned to sail around the world, they discovered that they were outnumbered by people of color who had a range of melanin concentrations that led to black, brown, red, and yellow skin. They also realized that sexually reproducing with any person of color would produce more colored people, which would eventually spell the end of Caucasian skinned people on the planet. And so that's why she stated that when the European came out of that dark age, that medieval age, and they began to go around the world taking everybody's stuff in the name of, then they realized that we must do this to control what's happening on this planet for our benefit. We are the minority. They have been, they'll continue to be. We are the minority people on the planet. But even deeper, the people who have melanin, and melanin in various measure, and the deeper the melanin, the more frightful it is for us, because if we mate with them, and that's what happened when those Caucasians went out taking everybody's stuff in the name of and raping the women, and the women became pregnant, and seeing after that time the child didn't look like them, and then caused them to have an innate fear of being genetically annihilated, and saying that we Europeans, we may war amongst ourselves, but we must come together on those who are outside of us. Those, because we must control that dynamic. Thus, Dr. Wilson argues that Caucasians are lightning, and excuse me, thus Dr. Chris Wilson's argument that Caucasians are fighting for genetic survival, and racism, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is their main weapon. She presents numerous examples of how this motive fuels the various forms of racial aggression and discrimination. She also analyzes popular games, holidays, and other cultural aspects of Western society to show just how they subconsciously remind Caucasians of the genetic threat that African men in particular pose to their existence. Over the years, Dr. Frances Cress Wilson has been accused of reverse racism and homophobia. Reverse racism. You know, that was one of the funniest terms for me coming up. Because, you know, reverse racism. Well, in order for you even to say reverse racism, you're acknowledging racism from the beginning. So the question becomes, how do you fix that? Well, you don't fix it by reverse racism. You don't fix it by taking from me what I took from you or denying me what I denied to you. How do you fix it? Well, of course, if you listen to this program now, you know there is no fixing it. There is no fixing it. It can't be done. Once again, the European suffers from cognitive dissonance and Caucasian fragility and hegemony. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine. So you have somebody who suffers from those deep-seated psychological and, you know, malaise. They're going to behave and act in a way that benefits them to the detriment of everybody else. Over the years, Dr. Wilson has been accused of reverse racism and homophobia. She mentioned in terms of homophobia about the men wearing their pants down, showing the buttocks, and all the homosexuality that's happening in our community and literally on the planet. And the spread of homosexuality is the bottom line is Europeans. I'm sorry, y'all. Y'all take it for what y'all want. It's become very clear to me. I read about three sources and trying to figure out was homosexuality happening on the continent prior to Europeans. Well, Europeans have been messing with the continent for, you know, thousands of years. There are certain cultures that did not deal with homosexuality. But as far as the continent was concerned, prior to, let's just say, prior to Islam. How about that? Not the Greeks, not the Romans. Because even though they were on the continent, Kemetic society was not homosexual. And that was the jewel of a society that Europeans dealt with. The Greeks for 300 years, and then the Romans for 100 some years. And then, of course, the dynastic period was dead, and still the culture was strong. The Coptic theology, Coptic church in Egypt. But then when it really changed was the 7th century, the 600s, when Islam, that's when the culture changed. But there was no homosexuality. Homosexuality was not something that was happening on the continent. If you have something that is different, as the saying goes, rescue me if I'm wrong. You can call 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and we could talk about it. But it is now. Homosexuality, because of the Europeans, is everywhere on the planet. It's everywhere on the planet. But the proof is in the writing of men like Winthrop Stoddard, a 20th century eugenist, who wrote an entire book explaining to Caucasians the threat that other cultures posed to the Nordic culture and how they should go about maintaining world dominance. Even today, we are seeing a resurgence in open racial aggression by Caucasians, even as word gets out that within the next few decades, the United States, I just saw a piece saying that in the middle of this decade, in the middle of the roaring 20s, the 2020s, 2025, 26, whatever, the majority of children will be children of quote of color. And, you know, I don't know how factual that is. You know, I do know that years ago, when he used to talk about what the demographer says, when the demographers were saying by the year 2050, people of color will be the majority people in the United States, and Caucasians will be the minority. They said that, I remember reading that 30-something years, maybe longer, 40 years ago. Well, I know you know, now they're talking about the 2030s, in the middle of the 2030s, by 2040, no doubt. So they cut it down to 10, 15 years that it will happen. Yeah. So, why does this thing do this? Okay, we got it back. There we go. Dr. Marimba Ani, African Paradigms for Understanding European Aggression. Dr. Marimba Ani holds a doctorate degree in anthropology, and she uses this perspective to explain the cultural values that drove Europeans to conquer and impose their way of life upon all other people on the planet that they've met. An important difference between her scholarship and traditional Western anthropology is the way she uses language and myth to support an African worldview instead of reinforcing the same system of education that has try to brainwash us into thinking like the oppressor. She has written two books. The first one, Let the Circle Be Unbroken. She identifies elements of African spirituality that have survived the Middle Passage and found expression in religious beliefs of our ancestors on American soil. Those fragments keep their spirits from being utterly annihilated by what she labels the Ma'afa, which means great calamity, great tragedy, great disaster. It is a Kiswahili word in the language of East Africa. The Kiswahili word is also used in Kwanzaa, Kiswahili. The use of African languages to conceptualize and describe reality has experienced by Africans in America is an important part of Dr. Ani's work. While there are more than 2,000 languages and dialects spoken on the continent, Kiswahili is one of a handful that is widely spoken and studied in multiple African countries as well in the diaspora. Since she gave a name to the dehumanizing oppression and violence our ancestors suffered during and after this so-called trade, this captive trade, cultural groups in New York, Louisiana, Texas, California have organized annual commemorations to help us remember and heal. I know that the caravan to the ancestors in Galveston, Texas, and in the Houston area, that's been pretty big. Her second book, Urugu, which I consider the Bible. To me, that book, as I was developing my understanding and my consciousness as I was going through organizations I was involved in,
Black Firefighters, one, other organizations, ASCAC and so forth. ASCAC is the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations and others. Find out about Urugu, was out, picked it up right away, and tough to read, especially in some of the, because she introduces some of the words, the Utamaraho, Utamawoho, and the cultural Sili and so forth. Just some different words she puts in. I would love it. I love it. But just understanding it, because, Urugu is an incomplete being. So it's Urugu, and the subtitle of the book is An African-Centered Critique of European Cultural Thought and Behavior. It is us looking at them. And also, too, within the book, she explains how they look at themselves. What do they think of themselves? It's not just us saying it. What do they think? We know pretty much what they think of us. Look what they've done. And one of the sections I read a few times is the one on religion, why that religion has to be the way that it is, why Christianity has to be historical, why all the other religions of the world understand that their theology is myth, is allegory. The images and so forth are not real. But yet, even though Christianity was taken from other religions that were myth, Christianity says, well, they're myth, they're fairy tales. But mine's is fact. Mine's is historical. How arrogant. And there's no proof to the fact. Urugu continues this use of language, but goes a step further to resist the tendency to view Greek and Roman myths as the go-to stories from the ancient world. Instead, she retells a creation myth told by the Dogon people of Mali and uses a rebellious fox called Urugu as a metaphor to explain the antisocial, inhumane values that Europeans have displayed in their clash with other civilized people on Earth. The reason we have moved outside the confines of European thought in order to effectively critique Europe is that you cannot defeat an enemy if you allow him to make the rules, if you allow him to even define the arena with which you go to battle in. You cannot defeat him. Asante Sana. Thank you, Dr. Ani, for giving us new tools to fight with. Asante Sana. Dr. Joy DeGruy, acknowledging and healing the impact of the traumatic oppression. Dr. DeGruy brings a social work lens to connect the dots between the Ma'afa and European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege has left in its wake, and the current state of confusion and pain so apparent among the masses of New World Africans, that's us. Unlike Dr. Ani, her focus is not so much on the characteristics of the oppressor, but the reactions of oppressed people. The outcome of centuries of collective and individual trauma, chronic trauma that one was born into and died of, as did one's parents, grandparents, and other relatives and neighbors, is not unlike the psychological effects seen in the victims and the witnesses of rape, torture, violence, including war or graphic tragedy. She calls it post-traumatic captive syndrome, which is also the name of her book. Her theory stands in direct opposition to the often heard claim that since none of us directly experience captivity, we should get over it and not blame captivity for our individual and collective failures or challenges. She points to examples of vacant self-esteem and hypervigilance to demonstrate how untreated trauma does not simply just go away, but shows up in even later generations. Each of these brilliant scholars has shown us how to define our existence in terms that helps us to accurately identify the challenges we face. In addition, each of them provides us with a set of tools to begin to repair the damage caused by the AFA and post-traumatic stress syndrome, and then to neutralize the current and future ability of racism, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege to keep inflicting damage on us. Our enemy is very intelligent, a wicked genius. Remember, Minister Farrakhan said that in relationship to Hitler, and the European Jews just went mad. He said he was wickedly great. Of course, which is true. You know, and so the European is evil. And he is intelligent with his evil schemes and continues to adapt as we find new ways to resist and recreate ourselves. So it is our right and duty to engage with these powerful sisters, their ideas, to think critically about them and their potential applications as we go about the work of African liberation and self-determination and sovereignty, which is the ultimate choice. A Bipi Fodie means our victorious destiny. Ashe. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and continue conversation and on this Friday. We're talking about education. Education for liberation. Education should be only about one thing. As Dr. Clark said, how to handle power. That's the only thing education should be about for us. Education should not be finding ways where we can be more good in their system and thereby securing a place, a job, a career in their system. Education should be about the ability for us, when the time is right for us, to run our own world. We should educate ourselves to run our own world. And the world I'm talking about is the continent of Africa. With all those resources, all that land, we need to educate ourselves on management. We need to educate ourselves on nation building. We need to educate ourselves in areas that will sustain us. How to build and run ports, trains, looking up the continent. Highways, interstates, if you want to use that term, subdivisions, homes, churches. Oh, no, never mind. Skip that one. Well, you know, I look at it this way. If you are a spiritual people and that's the building you want to have, a church or a sanctuary or a mosque or a temple or whatever. But I mean, you know, you build that. But that's not what's primary and necessary. In what's primary and necessary is hospitals and schools. In order for a community to be functional for us, we have to have a church. Damn. What am I coming up? What's wrong with my mind, y'all? Excuse me. We need to have a hospital. When the people get sick or birth them in, we have to have schools to educate them. We have to have control of agriculture to feed them and supermarkets to distribute them. These are things that are necessary. And that's what we need to implement. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to do with our brothers and sisters on the continent, get them to understand that the Chinese are doing things. They're not being philanthropic. They're not give a damn about development in Africa. The Chinese, like the Japanese, like many others, do not have the resources. Just found out that over 50% of the gold in the world, over 50% of the gold in the world came out of Africa. And when I see the British heifer sitting on all that gold in that picture, thieves, robbers. And the only way they'll pay is when we become strong in that collective mindset that we'll have. That's when they'll all pay. See, that's what I'm saying. You know, right now we are fragmented. No, don't talk about reparations at this time. Because what reparations need to do for us is to repair us. But when we have scattered mindsets, well, I want my repair. I want my repair to be money. I want my repair to be living good, living large. Yes, my folks, they were slaves, and they worked from sun up to, they can't see in the morning, they can't see at night, and they this, that, and the other. But because of that, I want to live large. I want to live in a big house, have 2-3 cars. I want big money. No, brothers and sisters, reparations is for the repair of our people and the development of institutions on the continent and in the diaspora to service us, whether that's a school, a hospital, whatever the kind of institution that we need that is necessary for us to prepare and grow, that's what we should have. Okay. I'm going to take a break. I need a break. When I come back for the break, we'll have more conversation. You stay right here with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay right here with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and other programs that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media.
This call is being recorded.
Acres of Diamonds, every Monday, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8. And then right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. And then Conversations, Reparations at 9 p.m. with Brother Jamal K. and Sister Lacey. And then on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. If it's Friday, and today's Friday, and it's 8 p.m., that's tonight, it will be Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, our program, once again, Revive. And then Sunday evening at 7 p.m., is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. is the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Once again, the Sisters Program, Esoteric Review with Sister Marcy Lee, will not air today. She has business she has to take care of, and it will be airing next week, I hope. Also, too, a program that I announced with my good brother, Brother Yosef Muhammad, is Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, not Eastern Time, excuse me. The number to call on Blog Talk Radio for Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness is 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. We're back and got some callers. Let me go to the call line. 602-602.
Brother Oshie.
Yes. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Brother Marcus. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Earlier in your conversation, you said by 2025, the demographics is going to change globally in the U.S. But then I asked myself the question, yes, the demographics change, but if it's still a curriculum
exactly
based on white psychology, white
it doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't make a difference.
It doesn't make a difference. Listen, Marcus, the Caucasian is the minority damn near everywhere and everywhere he's been, but yet he still dominates. It defies all laws of probability. Just as Dr. Bobby Wright says, wherever you find Caucasians, they're in positions of dominance and control. And if you find those Caucasians with us, we're in a subservient and lower position. It defies all laws of probability. It's on the continent and everywhere else throughout the diaspora. So, but the point they made was that they're saying that the children, because of people of color having a lot more children than Caucasians, and that the children will of color will outnumber Caucasian children. Now, I remember reading about the demographics and listening to what demographers were saying about the future here in America. And they said by 2050, that was like 30 years ago, 40 years ago. They said by 2050, well, of course, 2050 is only 30 years away. And those demographics would change, that Caucasians would be the minority and people of color would be the majority. It don't make a damn difference. Although 2050 now, they're saying 2035, 15 years away from now, that's going to happen. But it's still, once again, it doesn't make a difference. Just as you say, Brother Marcus, if you still have the same mindset, if you're still being educated by the same system, it don't mean a damn thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just want to say something about this guy here, this Queen Elizabeth and her grandson and his wife.
Okay.
No, that Merkel, she better be careful, because you see what Elizabeth did to Harry's mother. So she better be careful that she don't end up somewhere. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
if she could do that to her, you know, his mother, what the hell she say? So she better be careful the way she walking. Anyway, good brother, you take care. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Have a blessed weekend, Brother Marcus. Peace to you, man.
Brother. Take care.
Always. Mm-hmm. Peace. 646-646, good afternoon.
Adios. What's happening, my good brother?
I'm fine today, Brother Jay. What about you?
Oh, man, I can't complain, man. What is it going to do?
It's exactly.
Not gonna help. It's not going to
exactly.
make anything too much change. It's, you know.
It is what it is, right?
The devil control the world. So
yeah.
What could you do? I'm just hoping they blow each other up and less of us. Oh, listen, I got to call you back. The wife
right.
is on the phone.
All right, dear brother. Peace to you. Back. All right.
All right.
Yeah, we're going to continue this conversation on education. Article I found here. Why racial healing in America is dependent on thriving American African-owned educational institutions. This comes from contributor David Love to the Black Star, the Atlanta Black Star. In fact, this is the third time I've used Atlanta Black Star recently. That's good, because I used to always use Atlanta Black Star. And this article comes from September of 2016, almost 4 years ago. With everything that being thrown at the American African community, with all the challenges we face, there is a sense of urgency to act now. I agree. To support our own African institutions, to uplift our community and give back to ourselves and grow our legacy. What better place to start than with our educational institutions? Schools are the key to the future of American African community, but not just any school. To ultimately guarantee our success, American African people must fund and support American African owned and operated educational institutions. But see, here's the deal. I mentioned an educational institution that is totally independent, where we can develop a curriculum that will be totally beneficial to us. It's not charter. It's not choice. It's not public. It's not private. It's independent. It's African-centered. That's what we need to look at. To ultimately guarantee our success, African people must fund and support American African owned and operated educational institutions. This means seizing control of the educational process of our children, guiding the development of young African minds to act in the interests of our community, and securing our liberation in the process. Who else will do it? And why would they? And why should we search for a savior, a superman, a superwoman to solve our problems and make it right when we are the heroes we have been waiting for in the first place? History is replete with examples showing the benefits of African-owned schools. As Dr. Amos Wilson so eloquently stated, the function of education is not jobs. It is not the primary function. The primary function of education is to advance the interests of a people and to protect their interests, to secure their survival. The survival structures and institutions of this country are as much a part of its defense of its armed forces as are its soldiers. African-centered education is preparing our children to defend the very lives of African people. It is a military preparation, a preparation for war, Dr. Wilson continues. For if you do not survive, what does it matter if you teach reading to 100% of our children, or they learn math well, or they learn computer science, or all other things you think are important, when your very lives are in the balance, and it is your very likely
that they will be snuffed out in the next 10 to 20 years. And yet we still continue to look at schools and colleges and universities as vocational institutions. I'm going to try to play this, and I hope I'm able to do this in the manner that it deserves to be done. So we're going to try to listen to what our great ancestor, our great warrior scholar, our great Dr. Amos Wilson has to say.
And I've told you many times, I don't know whether it gets through to you or not, but we as black people must get over this thing of looking at schools and universities as advanced vocational training institutions. How many people recall that I've repeated this time and time again? That the function of education is not jobs. That is not the primary function. Children and people are educated. The primary function for education is to advance the interests of a people and to protect their interests, to secure their survival. That the educational structures and institutions of this country are as much a part of its defense, of its armed forces, as are its soldiers. The bombs, the weaponry that this nation uses against other nations and intimidates other nations with, develop out of the universities. The germ warfare, the chemical warfare, political, because some great professor is the head of this particular department, or they have illustrious names in the department, chances are you will never see them teach you in a class. The graduate students on some kind of assistantship will more likely be your teacher. Where are the brains and where are the professors? They're doing research. And often they're doing research on government grants for the government, for the corporations, for the other institutions in the society, and they are part of then the total system of domination of this country. Afrocentric education above all, and even beyond the teaching of African history and African culture, is preparing our children to defend the very lives of African people. It is a military preparation and a preparation for war. It is the means by which we will maintain our biological survival as a people. For if you do not survive, what does it matter if you teach reading to 100% of our children? Or they learn math well, or they learn computer science, or all the other things you think are important, when your very lives are in the balance, and it is very likely that they will be snuffed out in the next 10 to 20 years. And yet we still continue to look at schools and colleges and universities as vocational institutions. And here we have then at the University of Maryland, long connected with the U.S. Army, by the way, hosting a conference on so-called genetic factors in crime. Breaking charge that this meeting, which was canceled, was part of a broader program, a violence initiative, a federal government research agenda. So that this program was only a part of a larger agenda. And it was designed to move toward finding a genetic marker that would supposedly identify children at high risk of becoming criminals and to develop plans to deter them through medication. And this is interesting due to the fact that there's little or no real information that links directly in any kind of strong way or even in a mild way a relationship between genes and criminality. There's been no DNA segment that has been discovered that codes for crime. When you think about it, the idea is ludicrous anyway. What is crime? What is violence? What is violence? In other words, I'm asking this question because you have to do a linguistic analysis. There are all forms of what? Violence. There are many different types of what? Crime. Different types of aggression. Not all violence is necessarily bad. There is what we in psychology may call hostile aggression. But there is aggression or violence that may be used in terms of what? Self-defense. Violence may be used to protect your children from attack. Violence may be used to protect the lives of other people. So now if we're going to get a gene for violence, for a type of violence, or in removing the gene for violence, if we were to name for every type of crime you can name, so that even when we change definitions of crime, a new gene comes into being that we're going to find related to that particular crime. And when we decide that certain other behavior is no longer a crime, will the gene which was coded for that crime disappear? Ludicrous. Ludicrous. I talk in Black on Black Violence about the structuration of crime. That crime follows the type of violence that we talk about, or crime, even its nature, follows the class structure and follows the skills levels of criminals. You see? Why is there so much so-called violent crime in certain segments of the society? Because when you look at the skills levels of the people committing them, if they were to commit a crime, that's about the only crime they could commit. If they were accountants, they would commit the crime of embezzlement and steal hundreds of thousands or millions because they have a particular ability or skill. And you'd be a fool if you were an accountant or in an S&L where you could steal millions of dollars and then make the public pay billions back and then hang out on the street and knock somebody out in the head. So here we have this crimogenic society that robs our people of skills and other means so that if they decide to participate in a crime, then the probability is that it will be violent by the very nature of the way the society has set them up in the beginning. In other words, the society even determines the type of crime you are most likely to commit itself. Mm. Okay? And then it tells you, you're violent. Teach me to be an accountant. I won't hit any more people in the head. I'll just rob them by books. Okay? And then they want to talk about white-collar crime and, you know, and the other kind of collar crime. Come on. Wake up. This has nothing to do with genes. It has to do with the nature. I've also told you about reversal, right? I mentioned the fact that in order for us as a people to be in the situation that we're in, we literally have to be turned backwards. We have to think backwards, behave backwardly, deal with the world backwardly. It's necessary. It's the only way the system can maintain itself. Sometimes I say the best way to win an argument is to concede to your opponent. Okay, there is a genetic marker for crime. Let's now look at the criminal record of African peoples and European peoples. The record is clear. If there is a genetic marker for crime, when we look at the fact that the European has committed a crime against every people on every continent, destroying millions of people, then that argues for his genetic criminality. that argues then for us to medicate him and control him.
That was the great ancestor and warrior scholar, Dr. Amos Wilson. And we're talking about education. In his book, Awakening the Natural Genius of the African Child, Dr. Wilson discusses the role of Caucasian supremacy, Caucasian extremism in the education of African children. He argues that the primary purpose for educating African children was servitude, for maintaining European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. And also, Dr. Wilson believed that for all the education a African person may have, it is of no use to the interests of African people if that individual is acting in Caucasian interests, and they usually are. We have seen the benefits of education when a community places itself and its children at the center. Consider the 1950 Gallup survey, which found that American African graduates of ACBUs are more likely than American African alums from predominantly Caucasian institutions to be thriving in various areas of their lives, including their financial, social, and political and physical well-being and sense of purpose. And let me just say this very quickly about that, because I've seen some information on that as well, because of the ACBUs, the grounding of you, the atmosphere, and the context that you will have, as opposed to being in Caucasian institutions where you might be isolated, where you might be relegated to a situation where you're not receiving all the education that everybody else is getting offered. So let me continue. Including their financial, social, physical well-being, and sense of purpose. And according to the Network Journal, ACBUs are responsible for 22% of current bachelor degrees granted to American Africans. Among American Africans, 40% of the congresspersons, 12% of CEOs, 40% of engineers, 50% of professors at non-ACBUs are from ACBUs. 50% of American African professors at other places are from ACBUs. 50% of the lawyers, 80% of the judges are ACBU graduates. The top 21% undergraduate producers of American African with doctorate degrees are from ACBUs. Further, in Inside Higher Education report, in recent years, ACBUs created more PhDs than any other institution. Now, and that's cool. That's cool. But are they, you know, I haven't played this particular piece. So I'm not sure where it's coming from, but I'm going to play it anyways. It's called Better Schools, Better World. Better Schools, Better World. And it's from, we'll listen to ourselves.
History reveals that Black people are imaginative and innovative. Wherever we have lived on this planet, we have risen to meet seemingly insurmountable challenges. However, the prevailing narrative today is that we are a people trapped in a cycle of degradation, and that our only hope is that someone else comes to save us. We want to change this narrative. We believe there are great institutions preparing our children to become the transformative leaders of tomorrow. We also believe that there are Black-owned and operated businesses, as well as individuals in the Black community, who are willing to unite and help these institutions realize their potential. We are challenging you to donate at least $50 to help support Black-owned and operated educational institutions that are successfully preparing emerging leaders.
I need a school that will give me the tools to create tomorrow's technology. I'll make you a deal. If you build me a better school, I'll build you a better world.
I need a role model who will see what I see and feel what I feel to stand before me. I promise you, if you build me a better school, I'll build you a better world.
I need teachers who know my history and see my potential. Let's make a deal. If you build me a better school, I'll build you a better world.
build you a better school, build you a better world. I can understand that concept. But the reality is, just like education. Malcolm said, education is our passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today. But he just wasn't talking about the education that we see. I remember on the school that was named in his honor in Milwaukee, that was on the side of the building, and I appreciate that. But the reality is, he wasn't talking about public education. He wasn't talking about private education, charter or choice. He was talking about the education that instills in that African child the ability to know who they are and to prepare for that future and not to beg anybody. You can't, let me just say this clearly before I continue to read this. You cannot build a better world here in America in their stuff. You have to be independent. You have to be self-determining. You have to be liberated. You must be sovereign. If that's not the end goal to creating that better world, then you still will be begging Caucasians for the damn crumbs that he scrapes from his table that he's been giving us all these hundreds of years. Atlanta Black Star has created, Atlanta Black Star has done this, okay. Better School, Better World Challenge, a campaign in which American African-owned businesses challenge each other to donate at least $100 to the educational institutions that are incubators and training grounds for the leaders of the future. Professionals and other concerned citizens are welcome to join the challenge at any donation level. Better School, Better World Challenge is an initiative of Black Star Economic Alliance, a consortium of American African-owned and operated businesses whose purpose it is to recycle resources within the alliance. The BSEA, the Black Star Economic Alliance, plans to accomplish this by having each member commit to spending a certain percentage of its annual revenue on goods and services from other alliance members. The goal of the alliance is to create and support institutions of social upliftment to the African community, bringing a dramatic changes to where we live and improving our economic and political and educational systems. Why is all of this important? We all look back at the legacy of Black Wall Street, of American African-owned businesses, institutions, schools, and systems as a source of pride. But that source of pride is also a means of survival and a key to our future success. Black Wall Street worked because of the recycling of American African dollars in the community, a pattern and practice that is time-tested and something that we are reclaiming. Typically, in our community today, our dollar leaves within 6 hours. The dollar goes into our hands, and 6 hours later, that bad boy is gone. While a dollar stays in the Asian community 28 days, and it stays in the European Jew, in the European Jewish community 19 days. Meanwhile, we know that education is the most critical ingredient for liberation and the tool for building and sustaining a nation, the type of education we want and require. But to create an American African community that serves our needs, we need to shape African minds that will act in service to our community. This is why African people must find, this is why African people must fund and own their educational institutions. Better School, Better World Challenge. Obviously, I definitely agree with that. I truly definitely agree with our great ancestor, Dr. Amos Wilson. But the reality is, I would love for that fund to work with Us Lifting Us and other cooperatives that are out here. We need independent
African-centered educational institutions across this country and literally across this world. Everything that African people are involved in on the continent and throughout the diaspora is shaped and influenced by Europeans. That's right. On the continent and throughout the diaspora, we need to reclaim, recapture, and restore educational institutions in our image and in our interest. Now, I know you talked about all the things that ACBUs have provided, but let me just say this. Our condition as African people is worse today, collectively. Because the HCBUs, yes, the HCBUs helped a brother and sister to be 40% of congresspersons. They helped 20% that hold bachelor's degrees and 40% of the engineers, 50% of professors that are at non-HCBUs came from an HCBU. I understand that. Because see, when I look at it like that, what the HCBU did was prepare you to access this system a lot better. It didn't prepare you for independence. It didn't prepare you for self-determination. It did not prepare you for liberation. And it shown in hell didn't prepare you to be sovereign. It prepared you to say, yes, I'm better than all those other Negroes and those other, because I have this degree and I did this, that, and the other, and I'm ready to get my little piece of this nasty ass pie. I'm ready to go work from some Caucasians. Yeah. So, I would love that the HCBUs, in fact, they even changed their damn name from Historically Black Colleges and Universities to African-Centered Learning Institutions. Because that makes it clear what they're about. I'm telling you, you know, in my constant struggle in this year, I'm going to push it even stronger. We need to define clearly the verbiage that we must use to put the image into our minds. Yeah, damn it, I know African and Black are synonymous. No, they're really not. No, they're really not. Especially in today. Maybe back in the day, to some degree, okay. But today, no, they're not. Because those who want to be Black don't want to be African. They don't give a damn about being African. They Black. They Black Americans. They want the same. In fact, they don't even want to live near. They would rather, just like here in Atlanta, where you have some communities, gated communities and cul-de-sacs and subdivisions are all us. Beautiful homes, manicured lawns, and outstanding landscaping. And I bet the interiors are immaculate. I bet. They Black. They don't pull money together. They drive out of there and they drive so many miles to go to a strip mall so they can go to a store to buy their goods that is not ours. Don't run nothing. We don't have one damn supermarket. Don't have what? Excuse me. So I'm saying the education we need is not to prepare us to be, and so we can get a job to be an engineer. No, the education that we need desperately is so that we are engineers to build for us
And hopefully Africans on the continent are doing the same. We're going to come together and build for us. It is the only true existence for African people. All that other stuff is bullshit.
Bullshit, huh?
Oh, hey, Jay. Sorry, man. I
I didn't even know. You heard that. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay, Jay. That's okay.
I said this beautiful thing. Bullshit, huh?
I don't know. You know, Jay, I know we ain't supposed to be cussing and saying this, that, and the other. But know, sometimes, man, you're saying what you're saying. And you know what you're saying, and you understand the dynamics, and you say all in the midst of all this madness that you're in, and you see it don't change, and you're saying it again, and you're saying it again. You know, it's frustrating.
It's beyond frustrating. The life that we live, OC, is a life that if you don't have a certain balance, you know what I mean? You go crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because it's always something coming at you.
Yeah.
It's either from family members, loved ones, the world, or something. There's always some form of adversity coming your way that you must address and you must deal with it. And you know, the strong survive. Because
yeah.
We as African people have survived this madness that we've faced at the hands of this no good filthy devil.
Right, we're still here.
We're not going no place.
Right,
yeah, we're not going no place. He's going someplace because it has to revert back to what it has been, where there was some form of humanity. There's nothing humane about this devil.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
You know, that you can look at the head of this country, the type of filthy, stinking lowlife that he is. It's amazing. And that people fall for the lies, the trickery, the deceit, and the things that are going on in this country. And it annoys me to know it when I hear someone tell me that they're a patriot. A patriot to what, Negro? What are you a patriot to? Your oppressor? It's just like when somebody tell me I'm a Christian. I said, okay, so you what? You accept teachings of the man who raped your great-great-great-great-grandmother at will, and who raped your great-great-great-granddaddy at will, and raped your cousins at will, too. So you saying someone who diabolically did every type of evil one could imagine to another human being, you support his God or his so-called God? I mean, I always ask young people, do you ever sit down and take a moment and think about the brutality that our people face at the hands of this white man, and you would still trust him? And you know what the Negro always want to try and tell you? It's the past.
It ain't the past. It's the present past and the future.
I said, then you need to study your past and understand your past before you came in the midst of this devil.
Yeah.
And then you'll have a real understanding of what the past is and what your future should be. We never think about this. We never educate our children in regards to when dealing with this white man. Think about what his ancestors have done to your ancestors, and how what his ancestor has done to benefit for him to still be able to serve the type of brutality that he served on our people around the world.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to have some sort of kindred spirit for this evil. It ain't even popping off like that, man.
But it's
really a disservice that we don't understand it.
Well, the problem is the evil genius of Europeans and how they mash stuff. It's just like right now, you know, this some kind of romantic feeling about the British. You know, the TV series that is on, the British are just the royals, and the royals this, the royals that, you know, and yet we don't understand that the British were the most dogmatic of people. They still have lands all over. Some can argue about what's happening right now, because I seen a piece that was on Facebook that what was interesting, that the fire going on in Australia caused the sun and the different shades because of the fire to look just like the flag of the Aboriginal people. Now, whether that's true or not, I was like, man, that is, you know, that is a symbol.
That's the ancestors at work, brother.
Yeah, that is serious. That is serious.
If it's true, it's the ancestors at work telling them and telling the world that the jig is almost up.
Yeah.
That there's going to have to be some form of human reciprocity in regards to how things are being done and dealt with in the world, and that there's going to have to be some form of systematic change to bring some humanity back. But listen, right quick, man, I heard the unfortunate news, but then again, some good news, that the teacher may be joining you on Wednesday because he gave up his thing Monday and Wednesday because he just couldn't cut it. I mean,
I don't know if he just said couldn't cut it.
No, stop it. We don't have to be politically correct. Listen, I'm doing it. You ain't got to do that, but do what you're doing. Laughing and confirm if it is true that he's coming back home to get some more teaching and lessons.
Well, I don't know about teachings and lessons, Jay, but I do know that he definitely will be back on with me, where me and him can chop it up and he can give.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful, because like he said, from what I understand, he's not a radio host. He's a teacher.
Well,
and we just witnessed the teachers over these last couple of months that I guess unfortunately they had to remove the teacher from the classroom.
He did that to himself. He did.
I'm just joking, man.
Because,
so
you know.
If you listen in, Franklin, you know what I mean? It was repetitive, but you were trying to, like you said, wake the people up. But sometimes
where
teaching has to be done differently.
Well, that's true. But there's no denying a lot of the things he was saying was on point. I ain't saying everything he was saying. I'm saying a lot of the things he was saying was on point.
But you know, the thing was that I should not be able to not listen to your program for 2 months and come back and hear the same thing that was previously. It has to evolve to a level to where as it changes, because then people become disinterested. And you have to also do like you do every now and then, have guests in to expound on certain subject matters so that you can show the people that you are a teacher and that you're not a one-trick pony. Because the bottom line is, you got to be able to be diverse in your knowledge and your wisdom.
I mean,
you can't just talk science and not understand math, which is a part in the sense of science.
Yeah.
You can't talk English and not be able to understand philosophy, poetry, and other forms of the English, you know, curriculum and the things.
Because I don't want to be a one trick pony. That's for sure.
No, man, it ain't good to be a one trick pony, man. You gotta be diversified.
You gotta
be able to diversify. You know, that's why they always talk about this nonsense, diversity, inclusion, and all of that. Because you gotta be able to, as the brothers say, bit of versatile game.
Yeah.
And that's all it is, baby. It's gaming. And if you notice, whoever got the best game could get, what would they say back in the day? The fishes. You know what I mean? That's what made Marco so great. That's what makes Louis so great. They could captivate the fishes, as they say.
Yeah.
And that's why I always laugh and I always wonder, whenever the minister is no longer here, what is going to happen with the nation? Because, you know, every now and then I listen to, you know, their webcasts on Sundays.
Every now and then.
And I listen to some of the some of the ministers that they have.
Right.
And I haven't really ran across anybody that has the flair of a young Farrakhan. Because now, we could say whatever we want about Farrakhan, but you remember before the Million Man March when he went on his tour around the nation drumming
right.
up support for the first
right.
Million Man March? Well, I had the opportunity to go to, you know, that lecture that he had at the Army in New York. Had a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Pat, brother.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. Louis is one of the finest orators and entertainers
yeah.
you would ever
yeah.
want to have. The only one who I thought from that same nation, in a sense, that was
Colin.
As good as was
Colin.
Oh, Colin was the
Colin.
Master.
It was Colin.
Colin was the master.
It was Colin.
I remember when Colin was talking about that white woman?
Yeah.
Straight back. Oh,
it was
man.
Colin.
And Jay, absolutely died.
Jay, and when Khaled went down hard in Jersey on those European Jews,
that's right.
Then the government and the European
they
Jews
said,
came to the minister and said, "You want this march? You want to be on the mall in October 16th of 1995? You
got to get rid of him.
You got to get rid of him."
And let me tell you something. I don't know if you ever met Khaled.
Yes, I have.
But I met Khaled numerous times.
Well, I met him twice. Once because when he was still part of the march, they came to Milwaukee. The minister didn't come, but he came. And I was part of the organizing committee with Brother William Muhammad.
Well, I used to see him regularly at March 125 because I had worked there at one time. And my boy had, the one who helped bring me into consciousness, unfortunately, he passed away. Amin Ra of Amaran Isis Books. You know, he had a store there, and I would work there
mm-hmm.
periodically and stuff like that. And I used to see Khaled and the beautiful Phyllis Yvonne Stickney.
Woo! Phyllis Yvonne Stickney? Ooh, I love that chocolate woman.
Let me tell you.
Jay! You brought up a name, boy, that made my day. You made my weekend, Jay.
Hey, listen, that was two beautiful
yes.
Africans
yes.
together that, hey, let me tell you something. We don't even have to say anything about how beautiful Phyllis Yvonne Stickney was.
Oh, man.
Phyllis, to this day, and she was always an African god.
Yes.
That's why I loved her so
me
much.
Me too.
But let me tell you something. Khaled Muhammad was one of the most handsomest and beautiful brothers you will ever see in your life. And he had a shine.
He had a glow.
Shine,
yes, he
a
did.
Glow.
He
and
did.
He was a warrior. And he was so smooth. You know what I mean? He was approachable because, listen, he didn't worry about nobody rolling up on you because he was gas.
Yeah.
He didn't. That wasn't even an issue with him. But it was just the way that he carried himself.
Yeah.
He was magnificent.
Yeah.
Words can't even describe Khaled and the way that he treated brothers and sisters. And him with that queen
yeah.
at his side. I know the government killed him.
There's no doubt about it.
I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah,
they killed, listen,
to me, any of our brothers and sisters who they say got cancer, Bobby Wright and
right.
Amos Wilson, say they had an aneurysm, you know, say they had this, that, and the other, I don't give a damn. I say the government killed it. Because anybody who speaks out contrary to whatever position the government takes, they are a marked individual. Because they don't want no voices of dissent. And hell, that might even be my ass. But you know what, Jay? I'm damn near 70 years old. I don't give up. I'm serious. They can take me out tomorrow.
All I can say
because
is, O.C., on that note, we got to end the show.
That's right.
We got to end the show. And my brother, I look forward to next Wednesday when the teacher returns.
Okay,
to
then.
To be a part of the O.C. show. O.C. and the teacher. Talk to you later, brother. Enjoy your weekend,
Hotel. We end this program like when all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the world's resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, it's been a good program. It's been a good day. You have a great weekend. Be safe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Forie. Bibi Forie means our victorious destiny. Bibi Forie family, you have a great and safe weekend. See you on Monday. Peace.